This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. USDA left the corn balance sheet mostly unchanged except for the food, seed, and industrial use category. Corn use for sweeteners is expected to increase 10 million bushels in the 2014-2015 marketing year, leading to a corresponding 10 million bushel decline in ending stocks. Global corn ending stocks increased to 192.2 million metric tons. USDA increased its expectation for soybean exports by 40 million bushels, reflecting the record export pace and prospects for additional sales and shipments ahead of South America's harvest. The increased sales dropped ending stocks to 410 million bushels. Globally, ending stocks declined slightly from last month to 89.9 million metric tons. USDA increased world wheat ending stocks while traders had expected a cut. USDA boosted Canadian and Kazakhstan production, leading to a 2 million metric ton increase in global ending stocks. When farmers around the nation sign up for crop insurance from the government in March, they'll find some changes. Todd Gleason has some details on the differences.
The changes to the crop insurance program come courtesy of the 2014 Farm Bill. Gary Schnitke follows the crop insurance program for the University of Illinois. The ag economist told farmers at a November conference they'd be dealing with three new items when signing up for the 2015 plans. First, and maybe most notably, Schnitke says farmers will need to provide proof of conservation compliance on any highly erodible lands enrolled in crop insurance.
To be eligible for the subsidies associated with crop insurance, you will have to be in conservation compliance.
The second change to the crop insurance program involves the APH, or actual production history. From this point forward, it will be possible to drop a low yield from the calculation.
We don't know a lot about this yet. This was actually something put in place more for Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas farmers, but it gives the ability to drop a low yield from the APH. Presumably, there's going to be a charge associated with that if you choose to drop a yield from the APH. If county yields are below a certain level, you will be able to drop yield from APH. Whether or not we take that or look at that, we'd like to see the rates associated with those and what that dropping that yield will be.
But the third change to the federal government's crop insurance program is the introduction of a new policy. It's called SCO. That stands for Supplemental Coverage Option.
It provides county protection, and that's a key word here. County protection from 86% down to the coverage level of your combo product.
Here's what that effectively means. Throughout the Corn Belt, where most farmers choose revenue protection or RP crop insurance, the SCO product would cover losses from the RP level up to 86%. Many farmers in Illinois use 85% RP products, and that would leave just 1% for SCO to cover. Not worth it, according to Schnitke. This program is not available in all counties around the nation for all program crops and is only an option for those choosing to sign up for the new PLC or Price Loss Coverage Program under the Farm Bill. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service is conducting the 2014 Census of Horticulture. The census is the only detailed production and sales data for the U.S. floriculture, nursery, and specialty crop industries, including greenhouse food crops. NAS Administrator Joseph T. Riley stated the data will be used to help develop new technologies and programs to support sustainability and growth within the agricultural sector. Growers can complete the census securely online at agcensus.usda.gov or return their mailed questionnaire by February 5, 2015. NAS will be mailing the census to approximately 40,000 horticultural operations in the United States that grew and sold $10,000 or more of horticultural specialty crops, as reported in the 2012 Census of Agriculture. Producers are asked to provide information on horticultural activities conducted during 2014, including production of horticultural crops, value of products, square footage used for growing crops, production expenses, and more. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a member of the U.S. House Committee on Agriculture, was named chairman of the Subcommittee on Biotechnology, Horticulture, and Research for the 114th Congress today. Davis said he was honored by the selection and is looking forward to the opportunity to highlight important research done throughout the nation and in the state of Illinois. Davis has previously served on the Farm Bill Conference Committee. That's all for part one of this afternoon's Farm Show. Stay tuned for part two coming up after this. The EPA vows to get its annual issuance of renewable fuels targets back on schedule, but an agency official could not give lawmakers any date for getting the 2014, 2015, or 2016 done next year. EPA Acting Assistant Administrator for Air and Radiation, Janet McCabe, agreed EPA's failure to issue RFS targets this year has led to volatility in the ethanol markets. But McCabe told House Energy Policy Subcommittee members the agency would get things back on track next year. But then Chairman Lankford asked this question.
Can you give us a date certain when this is going to be resolved?
I can't give you a date certain, Congressman, because rulemakings are not ones that I can predict.
So give me a month.
We will move as expeditiously as we can. We certainly
So this could be 2016 before this comes out, and we'll miss 2 years.
We are committed to getting these rules out in 2015 and meeting our deadline for the 2016 volumes.
Then there was this exchange between McCabe and subcommittee top Democrat Jackie Speier.
I mean, to just have this kind of ephemeral, we'll have it done sometime in 2015, doesn't give the industry any confidence moving forward.
Yeah, we are working on the steps that we'll need to take, the time that will take, and we'll...
That's gibberish, Ms. McCabe. I'm sorry. Just be clear. What is your goal? Is it April? Is it May? You've got to have a goal that we can hang our hats on.
McCabe responded her goal is to have the RFS rules done as quickly as EPA can in 2015. The ethanol industry complains the RFS uncertainty is costing demand, investment, and jobs. I spoke with Vice President of Industry Relations for the Renewable Fuels Association, Robert White, about his organization's thoughts on the RFS situation.
The Renewable Fuel Standard was passed in 2005 and expanded in 2007 and really was there to help ethanol and biodiesel and all renewable fuels have a fair shot at the marketplace. We're putting our product through the oil industry's infrastructure, and that obviously is a challenge because they would just as soon it be their product versus ours. And so the Renewable Fuel Standard was working very well, and actually last year was probably its most successful year. But this year, actually last fall, almost a year ago to the date, EPA proposed reducing the amount for 2014. Now, we still don't know what that amount is, but it really boils down to, are they going to allow the Renewable Fuel Standard to work as proposed, and that's create infrastructure, allow more ethanol and other renewable fuels into our fuel supply, or are they going to cave and let ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, Chevron, etc., control our renewable fuel standard? And we are anxiously awaiting that result, but we think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. So after the administration took all this effort to try and appease one of the groups at least, they're going to meet somewhere in the middle and make everyone upset. And the excuse is really more important than the number. We've been saying that for months, trying to get everyone in the administration and obviously the EPA to understand that. The statute says one thing. You're trying to use demand as an excuse or lack thereof for your logic in reducing the overall number. What's ultimately going to happen is there's going to be lawsuits from the oil companies, there's going to be lawsuits from the environmental folks, there's going to be lawsuits from obviously the ethanol industry if the number doesn't remain at the statutory levels and there's not clear reasoning that makes sense.
Now let's talk about that demand issue. There was talk that there was a blend wall that had been hit.
Yeah, the blend wall boils down to an artificial barrier, essentially when all stations, all engines are using 10% ethanol. We have E15 now approved for 2001 and newer vehicles. We have E85 that can be used in the 17 million flex fuel vehicles that have been around since 1999. The blend wall is what the oil companies have done at retail. They don't own any of the stations anymore. So when you see one of the major oil refiners' flags out front, they control the supply options, they control what fuels they can offer, but still have no ownership. It's like the ultimate business model. You control all the decisions, but you get all the profit and have no liability. So we're continuing to work through things like the Petroleum Marketing Practices Act. It simply says if you want to offer alternative fuels, you can't stop it with a franchise agreement. That still happens today. The FTC is currently investigating some of those allegations. Senator Grassley and Senators Klobuchar have been pushing that issue very hard. But until there's a fair fight, until the subsidies are removed from petroleum that were removed from ethanol back in 2011, it's not a free market. And everyone needs to understand that. That's why it's important to something like the Renewable Fuel Standard to push that.
Again, that was Vice President of Industry Relations for the Renewable Fuels Association, Robert White. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.